Welcome back to Fork This with Intoxicate. I am your host, of course, Intoxicate Kate Slentz, and you can listen to us every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on 1490 WGCH, as well as Wednesday at 6 p.m. on Westchester Talk Radio. And of course, we're a podcast as well. So we are having a fantastic time talking about this amazing initiative in Norwalk called Norwalk Now. And they've got this great event coming up called Crush in October. And one of the participants that's going to be doing some very cool things there is Greg Glazier, who is the publisher and editor of Modern Distillery Age. Greg, how are you?
I am fine. Good to talk with you.
It's great to speak with you. I think the last time I saw you, we were sitting at Peaches and enjoying a delicious cocktail. I think maybe you had a beer, if I remember correctly.
And I think you're remembering correctly,
yeah. Yeah, and we had some chicken skins. Were you there for the chicken skins?
I must have been. How could I have missed the chicken skin course?
The fried chicken skins, it's the best thing there. And well, I shouldn't say the best thing there, but it's one of my favorite things there. And we were listening to some amazing music. It was a band that you happened to be following. So
that's right. I dig the music upstairs. It's a good scene.
Yeah, Peaches is a great spot for Southern comfort food, for great craft cocktails, and for their music scene up in that juke joint.
That's right. I was born in Macon, Georgia, too.
Were you really?
So my mother was born and raised there. I was born there, and so I was raised here in Yankee territory, but I come from the homeland.
Wow. So you must be like you have your mark set a little bit high with the Southern food, huh?
Well, yeah, it changes all over the Southeast, but I know mid Georgia food the best.
So you made your way north to Yankee territory, as you say. How did you kind
of or enemy territory? I might say, but that's a whole other story.
How did you start getting involved in the spirits world?
Well, it started back in 1991 when I began home brewing, and I enjoyed the hobby. I joined the local homebrew club. From them, I got involved in studying to be a homebrew judge, and I said to myself, gosh, I've done all this studying about beer. I have so much information crowding my head. Why don't I start writing about it? And I began pitching editors and writing stories after that about beer. And that morphed into writing about distilled spirits and sake and mead and cider and all these good drinks and then the foods that go with them.
That's pretty amazing. And how long ago did you start Modern Distillery Age?
I started the magazine at the very end of 2009 and have been publishing pretty much weekly since then. It's a small format trade magazine for people in the industry.
Very cool. And is there anything, well, I know that we were talking when we set this interview up that you were kind of like closing your latest issue. Anything interesting that you kind of want to talk about? Something that's piquing your interest in the world of spirits recently?
There's just so much every week. I'm shocked. And when I talk to people, they say, how can you publish every week? There can't be that much news. I tell the people at the companies, whether they produce the spirits or they import them, that I think they're sending me about 15,000 press releases a week.
Wow.
There are so many new products on the market. So to pick one out, it's hard. Although I was at a private party last week, and my friend, her father is from the Ukraine, and they have a lot of Russian friends as well as Ukrainian, and they had a fellow here who has his own vodka that he's starting to sell in the United States. And this guy happens to be, not sure if I've got his, yeah, I think I have his last name right, Zamir Gotta, G-O-T-T-A.
Wow.
And for people who watched Anthony Bourdain's show, he was his sidekick on that TV show, Parts Unknown.
Oh.
The Russian guy that's with Anthony Bourdain going everywhere and eating and drinking and going crazy. And this guy is got his own vodka brand called Zamir Vodka. And so that's one of the most brand new things I've come across in the last couple of weeks.
I feel like there's a lot of like smaller distilled products popping up. Is that true?
There is. We talk about what happened in California in the 60s with the new wineries that came out. And then in the 70s and beyond, it became the breweries. And it started to happen with the cideries. And it's certainly happening with the distilleries, which they're just adopting the same terminology, calling them craft distilleries. Mm-hmm. And they're all over the country in huge numbers. We even have, gosh, I forgot the last number. There's got to be at least 6 in Connecticut. And New York has so many more. You're right. They're all over the place. And they all have their own association, and they have their own annual convention and their own competition. It's a big deal these days.
It's pretty interesting to me, and I love it. You know, I always love capturing people's stories, which I'm sure you do as well, because I feel like it's so interesting to kind of see the motivation to kind of drop, because I feel like a lot of people that have opened up distilleries or breweries that I've spoken to recently had, you know, the first part of their life kind of set, and then all of a sudden switch gears and are doing this. And I always find that kind of story very interesting, because it's got to be, you got to be pretty passionate to kind of leave behind, you know, maybe a comfortable job where you're working all the time to, you know, starting something new in the spirits world, because I feel like it's very, you know, it's not a guarantee.
It's amazingly difficult. It's to say it's not a guarantee is an underestimate. I mean, gosh, I think most of these people are going against the wind. I wish them all the best of luck, whether they be distillers or brewers or whatever. But the alcoholic drinks industry is highly competitive, and there are so many new brands on the market. It's hard to capture the attention of the distributors, who you have to first sell to.
Right.
And then the customers who they're, you know, who your ultimate customer, you know, your ultimate person buying your product. It's difficult.
And I think that's the process I think that fascinates me the most, because I think people are really fabulous at what they do, but it's the distribution that literally puts me in circles. I mean, I spiral when I hear some of the, I mean, and then it's state by state, and then, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Every state has its own laws for alcoholic drinks, and then sometimes it can go down to the county or local level. So it's much more than 50 different laws in this country. I don't even know how many different laws there are when you get, as I said, into the county and local level. So it's difficult for these folks who are starting new brands. It's hard for the people who have established brands. And the thing they need to know is, you mentioned distribution, and I had mentioned it a moment ago, that is really whether you're the importer or you're the producer, your real first customer is not the person buying the product at the bar or the restaurant or the package store or the grocery store. Mm-hmm. It is the distributor. That's who you have to convince to take your product, because then they're going to sell it to the next tier of the alcoholic drinks industry, which is the retail. Mm-hmm. And then they're the ones who eventually sell it to the consumers. So it's a hard sell.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We are speaking with Greg, who is the publisher and editor of Modern Distillery Age. Greg, when you are going out, is there a specific cocktail that you gravitate towards? Is there like your cocktail?
Well, yes, I have two answers to that. Number one, yes, there is, and I would say it is something very simple, and that's the old-fashioned. But I also, if I'm going to a place where I think they have a good cocktail program and they have good bartenders, I ask them, well, what's your specialty drink? What are you making that's yours, that stands out, that you'd like me to try? So I will happily go for that if it sounds okay to me. But if not, I'm happy with the old fashioned.
You're happy with the old fashioned. I love that about you. And I love that you ask, because I always tell people when they go out to eat to always ask questions and interact with staff, because feel like it enhances the experience, and you generally end up falling in love with a dish you would have never, or a cocktail that you would have never ordered otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, going out to a restaurant or a bar, it's show business, really, when you think about it. They are the entertainers, and they should be there to be hospitable, but also to entertain you in the sense of giving you something, as you just said, that you're not familiar with, that mm-hmm. might be an eye-opener for you. You might like it, you might not like it, but at least if you ask, as you said, you're going to learn something, and you're going to add to your experience of being out. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, just stay home.
Right.
You know, and open a can of beans.
Open a can of beans. I love that.
And then mix them with a good bourbon.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's beans and bourbon. It obviously goes hand in hand, right?
B&B, right.
Now, I will tell you, growing up, I was with my grandparents an awful lot, and love them. And they always had cocktail hour, right? I think around 3:30. My grandparents always had cocktail hour. And my grandmother loved her. I think they both loved their Manhattans. I'm going to have to verify that. But I want to bring back the cocktail hour. What are your thoughts?
Happens at my house every night around 6:30.
Right?
Come on over.
Don't you think, I mean, as a society, we're working just a little bit too hard that we should all just kind of pause and just have a cocktail?
Well, yeah, I do. And sometimes my cocktail hour is something as simple as a beer, but that's in the same frame of mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd imagine you have to do a lot of tasting.
We do. I mean, not only for my magazine, I also work closely with a Modern Brewery Age. It sounds similar, but it's a separately owned publication, but it's owned by a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We have one tasting panel a month for all the samples sent to me for spirits, one tasting panel a month sent to him for Modern Brewery Age with beers, and we have one tasting panel every 2 months for Yankee Brew News, which is a consumer beer newspaper covering the Northeastern craft beer scene. I happen to be the editor-in-chief of that. I've been with them since 1994. And so we have that tasting panel. So, yes, wow. UPS and FedEx are at my door sometimes 2 to 3 times a day, Monday through Friday, dropping off hundreds and hundreds of bottles and cans of samples a year.
And what does that look like when you're sitting down to, say, like a tasting panel of beer? What does that really look like? Because I assume you're not drinking the whole can. You're just going to taste, right?
Yes, of course. I don't do it alone. We put together a panel, and there's anywhere from the smallest number we've been 6, at the highest number we've been 12 people. We just sit around in a circle. I like to do these blinds, so before everyone comes, I wrap the bottles or the cans with a piece of paper so no one will see the name of the product in case they, you know, might be leaning one way or the other based on that. Mm-hmm. And then I just tell them, you know, this is a bourbon, it's 45% ABV, or this is an IPA, it's 6.5% ABV. And then we taste, and everybody makes comments, and I write down what I hear, and then later coalesce and write them up. But in answer to your very first question, what does it look like when we sit down to all of this? Have you ever heard of the word nirvana?
Yes, I have.
Yes, of course. Yeah, well, that's sort of what it is.
Nice. I mean, but because
it's social, and our panels are made up of groups, a group of people who ebb and flow, and exactly who attends, but most of them are people in the business. I have brand owners, importers, sometimes people from distributors, sometimes people from retail stores or bars or restaurants. So most of them are people in the business who are familiar with the products and have good palates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, I've done lots of tastings before. I've judged cocktail contests. I haven't actually been on an official panel to you know, taste various things. But I imagine it's hard to kind of separate your own personal taste from, you know, what it should be. Is that difficult? Like for me?
Well, yes, it is. I agree, because when you're tasting, whether it's in an informal tasting panel the way I do them, or whether it's a judging competition where it's a little more formal, or whether you're just out with friends to a restaurant or a bar, or whether you're having your own dinner or cocktail hour at home, there are so many factors that come into play that are subjective.
Yeah.
It is, how do you feel? What time of day is it? Are you tired or are you full of energy? What have you already eaten or not eaten? Is it summer, winter, fall, or winter? All these factors change our perception, I believe, of tastes, whether it be drinks or foods. So there's a lot that goes into it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because for me, I think about, like, I would love to sit on a panel and do this. But for me, I think if it was beer, if it has anything to do with IPAs, I'm not going to be a great panelist because it's not my favorite type of beer. So,
well,
I understand that.
We generally just make objective comments. Well, they're mm-hmm. subjective too, of course. But I mean, we say, well, it smells like this, it looks like this, it tastes like this. So even if you don't like something, you can say what you're tasting and you're smelling, and
right.
the person making the notes can jot it down. I mean, we get things in the tasting panel for my magazine, Distillery Edge. I'm not a real fan of chocolate cake vodka. But and that's an understatement, but I can make comments on it. Would I ever want to drink it? God, no.
Yeah.
But I can taste it and make some comments.
I'm with you on the flavored vodkas. I'm with you.
We once had smoked salmon
Ooh.
Vodka from
oh,
an
gosh.
Alaskan brewery.
I can't imagine... I don't know. The thought process behind that, I'm not sure if I want to drink smoked salmon.
Yeah.
Not sure if that's high on my list, Greg.
Yeah, probably not.
Now, of course, Norwalk Now is hosting this amazing Crush event October 16th to the 20th. Can you tell us a little bit about the events that you're going to be at so we can make sure to
Well, yeah,
earmark
you mentioned Peaches earlier, so I'm going to be the guest speaker at the Southern Fried Whiskey Dinner at Peaches on the 16th. And I don't know the whole menu right now, but there'll be four courses, I was told, and we're going to pair four different American whiskeys with each course. So when you say American whiskey, you're talking either bourbon and or something that can just be not technically and legally bourbon, but a whiskey made out of grains.
Very fun. That sounds like, and that's Tuesday, October 16th at 7 p.m., right?
That's right. Yeah,
okay.
That's the one, yeah, right. Peaches.
And of course,
so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
And of course, everyone can visit norwalknow.org. If you click on the calendar and look for Crush, all of those events are posted with all the, you know, links for tickets and everything, because you definitely don't want to miss that. I'm definitely signing up for this. Any other place where we can find you in Norwalk?
I don't do a lot of public stuff. I get asked about once a year, maybe twice a year, to do a talk and a tasting on a different kind of drink for the Norwalk Historical Society. They use them as a fundraiser, and I did one just a week ago on rum, and that was a lot of fun.
You know what I would love to...
I've done one on tequila and mezcal for them,
Ooh.
And bourbon and scotch whiskey and beer. Yeah, it's a great group. They get about 50 people, and... It's fun.
I would love, and maybe we could make this happen someday. You tell me, because, you know, maybe we're not on the same wavelength, but I would love for you and I to get together at some point and do an on-air tasting.
Oh, that'd be great.
I would love that, to kind of, like, you know, get your actual, like, first reaction, you know, over the airwaves, and to be able to kind of talk about
that'd
it.
Be fun.
That would be
very
fun.
I used to
fun.
Do this years ago on TV for the local cablevision channel. It used to have a talk show that had a male and a female host. It was David and, oh, I can't remember her name right now. And I used to come in with a crate full of beers, and we'd set them up, and we'd sit there on air and taste them.
Oh, I love it. We got to make this happen. We got to make this happen at some point. Well, I'm excited to see you October 16th in Norwalk at Peaches for this Crush event. It's amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Well, thank you for asking.
You're the best. You're the best. Well, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to Fork This with Intoxicate. Keep it locked right here at 1490 WGCH.